This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Booksplode, The Death of Captain Marvel. This is the end of everything. This is the end I know. This is the end of everything. Take your love with you when you go. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Booksplode, The Death of Captain Marvel. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Howdy.
And this is the Booksplode show, the bi-monthly show. We look at a trade paperback, a graphic novel, and it was unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. It's the sister show to Josh's Talksplode interview show. These shows are brought to you by the patrons, so thank you, patrons. We enjoy doing them. And this is our last one of the year, and our last one of the month of two Booksplodes, because we forgot to do one. And we thought we'd take a look at The Death of Captain Marvel. And this is specifically the Gallery Edition version that came out very recently, The Death of Captain Marvel Gallery Edition. I think it came out last month, didn't it, in November?
Yeah, it was very...
Yeah, it's relatively new. So, spoilers for this very, very old story. If you're worried about that, I don't know why you're listening, but spoilers anyway.
It came out on November 10th.
Yeah, so it's a new edition. And before we get into the book and the specifics, this is like a bucket list book for me. I don't know how you feel about it, Josh, because, you know, there's the seminal stories in comics, the ones that are always referenced, and for whatever reason, well, probably because it came out when I was five, I had never read The Death of Captain Marvel. Never actually read the story. I knew he died of cancer. You know, it was a famous story. When I was a kid first reading comics in the 80s, it was constantly being referenced. You know, Captain Marvel's death, the irony of him dying of cancer. Just never read it. And I always wanted to read it. And it was from a book that I was always in the back of my head. Like, I should read that one. And that's just one of the last sort of big ones that I got to read. So what is your history with this story?
I mean, it's very similar. It's one of those things that I'm aware of. You know, the cover is very...
iconic.
Yeah, iconic. Like, you just recognize it, but I kind of never read it. And the fact is, I kind of didn't really know much about Captain Marvel at all because, you know, we ended up with the Carol Danvers version, and then, like, we just had done Avengers Forever, and there was that, I forget his name. There was the, you know, Space Face one, you know, and this is pretty similar. And then I kind of remembered, you know, the Rick Jones Captain Marvel thing, but I didn't really know.
Same, you know, because he died, and he's been dead. He's come back in the comics way here and there, but he's remained dead since then, so I had never really read Captain Marvel comics before.
This specific version, I think for a long time you could get this the novella, which is 65 pages. But this version that we're talking about, it contains three or four stories. Marvel Superheroes 12 and 13 from 1967, which is written by Stan Lee with art by someone. And then there's a story from 1968, which is Captain Marvel number one.
Well, it's part three of that first part story.
Right, that's true. Then Marvel Spotlight from 1979, which is Doug Bench and Steve Englehart. And then finally, the graphic novel from 1982, which is all by Jim Starlin. And I don't know if there was a lot of other Captain Marvel, but I think that the two stories that they put in front of it gave you literally all of the context you needed for what came later. And I found that really helpful.
Yeah, the first three issues are his origin. And then the second two issues are from 10 years later
yeah.
are the incident that leads to his death.
Yeah, Gene Colan.
Gene Colan in the original one. I thought that was really interesting, Josh. So the first two issues are in Marvel Superheroes. So it's like their anthology book. They introduce this character called Captain Marvel. So I'm reading it. I read issue 12, and then I read issue 13, and then I scroll over, and it's suddenly it's Captain Marvel number one in 68. And I was like, wait, are they just going to skip? Mm-hmm. And it turns out, no, they're not. It's the third part of his origin. But for whatever reason, they moved it from Marvel Superheroes to his own book. I was trying to even think of that happening now. It would never happen now. But like,
well, there was just that.
In the middle of it, fuck it, give him his own title, and now we're going that way.
There was the thing where, and I don't know when it ended, but in the 60s, Marvel basically distributed through National, and because of that, they were only allowed eight
titles.
They were only allowed eight titles, and that's why, if you look at early Marvel, you know, there was Tales of Suspense, Tales to Astonish, Journey into Mystery, those kind of things. Yeah. And so I don't know when that ended, but 67 to 68 might have been the spot.
It's interesting, though, like, if you go back and you're like, oh, I'm gonna buy Captain Marvel number one.
Right.
And you buy it, you're getting part three of three.
That's true.
So that's just funny. Anyway.
Yes, it is. That, you know, so that said, if we're going straight through this.
But also, that said, this edition is two-thirds preamble to the death of Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Two-thirds of the page count is the backstory before you get to the actual story.
But it doesn't. It feels not wasted in any way. I think that they actually did a really good job putting this together and picking the things that you needed to read. And also, you know, just you get, you know, from a historic standpoint, you get, you know, three sort of different eras in comics, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you get a 60s Stan Lee story, you get a 70s Mensch Engelhardt story, and, you know, the Starlin one is in the early 80s, pretty much the same as the 70s one.
Didn't Pat Broderick draw the middle one?
Jim Starlin did Captain Marvel 34 with Nitro. He wrote and drew that.
Yeah.
No, the dialogue was Engelhardt.
Mensch Engelhardt were the writers, and then Pat Broderick was the artist.
Yeah. But I think it was really well done in that way, and I really like that sort of like impromptu history of comics. So that said, like the Stan Lee sort of introduction of Captain Marvel, the three issues that introduce him, the character, they're not that great. They're very basic. You know, it's sort of low-grade sci-fi space stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, I think that the thing that's interesting about it, and this is probably Marvel's secret weapon, is that it still provided a jumping-off point for a thing that became more interesting. They just...
Well, yeah, because Carol's in this story.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of like, oh, wow, she's right away. She's the... And also, I thought she's head of security at whatever this Air Force base is or space base, and I thought, wow, that's progressive.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not like they're not setting up to be a hero. It's not like she becomes Captain Marvel until much later. It was just she was Carol Danvers, head of security. And I was like, wow. I had the same thought you did. I was like, interesting, in 1967.
And also, she wasn't like a helpless, she wasn't a Carol Ferris kind of type.
Or a romantic love interest. She was just...
Yeah. I was curious if that was going to happen because that's what you kind of expect to happen. And it wasn't a thing, which is, you know, oddly progressive. You know, and it didn't, there was no hint that like this person would become it later, but she has always been a part of the Captain Marvel history, and she shows up again during the Nitro story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that first one, it's very like Stan Lee workaday, you know, kind of dumb. It's silly, but there's nothing really unique about it to even make it stand out.
Yeah, so there's a Kree squad that comes to Earth. He's a member of the Kree. Mm-hmm. And he's Captain Marvel, Marvell. And he decides he likes Earth and he's not going to be a part of them attacking it. So he becomes, you know, by happenstance, Captain Marvel. There's also a whole love triangle where his boss is in love with Captain Marvel's girlfriend. And so that causes a rift as well. But he basically gets to Earth and switches sides.
And this goofy thing where he has to keep his helmet on or he has to take a pill and the pill lets him breathe on Earth for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, that they got rid of at some point, which is real good because it was stupid. And also, like, he was at one point, he's in his hotel. He's in a motel room for a lot of the book. And like, he's got his helmet off. And I was like, you're wasting the pill in the motel room? I think maybe the most interesting thing was actually the, I mean, there's a little bit of a Cold War sort of thing going on, but the motel owner who was super suspicious about it. And you weren't, like, I think that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
Something's going on here. He had this, like, weird cylindrical suitcase. And that was the thing that nobody could get over.
Yeah.
Why does he have that weird bag?
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. It wasn't like blow your socks off, but
no.
There's seeds of some interesting things there. He's a hero unlike the other heroes in the 60s at Marvel. You know, he's this alien who, he's not quite Superman, but he has the power cosmic. And
did he have power cosmic at this point? I don't think he did.
Maybe
he
not.
Was strong because he was Kree.
Right.
He had belt jets, so he couldn't fly. He could jump.
You're right. He doesn't have the power cosmic till the next story.
No, and everything he has is technology, so he's got nothing going on. It's that stuff comes along later. This Captain Marvel has like almost nothing to do with what he becomes.
Right.
Other than, you know, brave and wanting to do good. So, you know, that was what it was. But it's interesting that a lot of the Kree stuff was there. Ronan the Accuser was there.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of basic building blocks. And then so we switch over to Captain Marvel number 34.
A lot has changed in 10 years at that point.
Yeah. And it has Nitro. And Nitro, you may remember, is the catalyst for Civil War.
Right. I did forget that.
It's one of those, oh, this is a great character. And it starts off, and we're spending time... We spent a lot of time with Rick Jones, actually, which I think is great because he's another one of those Marvel characters who I think used to be much more well-defined than he is now.
Well, you never see him now.
Yeah, he's talking to Mentor.
They've shifted Captain Marvel's story to the Titan. To the Cosmic Titans. So, you know, Thanos' father, Mentor, they all live on the moon Titan. It goes around Saturn. And Star Fox, Thanos' brother, is in it. And Moondragon. Like, there's suddenly he's in this whole Marvel cosmic world, like deeply entrenched in it.
So there's one issue, and I really thought that this was actually brilliant. So there's one issue, he's got to fight Nitro, who's a actually compelling villain. Like he can blow himself
up and reconstitute himself.
Right. And
he's like a human grenade.
He doesn't really have, he's not worried about anything. Right. He will always bring himself back together. He's just angry. He doesn't care about anybody. But he's stealing a compound, nerve agent compound or something like that. And sort of the end of the issue is that if it gets ruptured, everybody's going to die. So it does. And Captain America, you know, closes it off with his power.
Captain Marvel.
What did I say? America?
Yeah, but he pulls a Captain America. He basically jumps on the bomb.
Yep.
And forces it closed with the super strength. But as we'll find out later, doing that will expose himself to this nerve toxin.
And he kind of passes out, and then they just leave it. And I thought, oh, that's amazing. That's so many years apart. So then we switch over, and we've got this gigantic Titan story that we're kind of thrown into, like it had already begun, but not, wasn't bad.
That's the Pat Broderick one. That's the one, the Saturn Storm.
You've got the computer that runs Titan has become sentient, and it's decided to destroy everything, and they have to fight it. And it was good. It was like great 70s space shit.
Yeah, it's his buddy is Drax.
But Drax is going to kill him after they finish this.
Right, but for now they're teamed up to fight this computer, and he has bitchin' 70s sideburns, Captain Marvel does. And I love the fact that his mask accounts for the sideburns.
It's true.
It doesn't cover them up. There's a cutout for them, which I think is great.
It doesn't really, again, that doesn't make sense. There's no reason that would work. And also Drax the Destroyer you may not recognize at this point because he looks like Golden Age Vision, and he looks like a Skrull. And or maybe it was there was a character in the Golden Age called Destroyer. He looks kind of like that. Actually, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Prince Valiant haircuts and things like that. You know, but at this point he does have the power cosmic. They kind of explain what happened, but it doesn't really matter. And I don't know, just a big space epic. And again, this doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything, but it sort of comes back when we get to the Starlin stuff.
It fully infuses him into that world, right? So he is not part of that family, the Mentor, Thanos, Star Fox family, but he seems very much entwined with their lives. You know, Thanos is a villain and Star Fox and Mentor are fighting against him along with Drax and Captain Marvel, but you know, it puts him into that sort of family of characters very deeply. So you understand the connection to have when you get to the next story. It makes more sense.
Great sort of just Doug Mensch. Steve Englehart always gets called. He did the dialogue on one of these, but these are the middle ones are mostly Doug Mensch stories, which are just super fun. You know, these are the comics that we probably would have come across when we were little kids in boxes of random comics.
It is interesting, though, like when you look at the history of comics and comic reading for me, the 70s remains the black hole.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, like you read the 60s stuff for Marvel because you want to see the beginning of it and the Silver Age DC stuff. We grew up in the 80s, the Bronze Age. I certainly read those comics, 90s, et cetera, et cetera. But for whatever reason, that 70s is a black hole. And I always thought Death of Captain Marvel was a 70s story. It came out in 82.
Yeah.
But I haven't read these books. I think hardly any, basically none.
The thing about these ones, though, too, is I'm flipping through them. They feel much more modern than I would think. There's very little, not very little, but there's much less of the sort of explication that you kind of expect in the over-wordiness. It isn't that way. They don't read like even Avengers Forever, you know, was a shitload of dialogue and talking. And when you sort of flip through these, they're kind of wordy, but it isn't overbearing at all. And they weren't a struggle to read. The Stan Lee ones were kind of a struggle to read.
And it's interesting because, like, Pat Broderick, who draws this middle story, you know, I know him from the 90s doing Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look that much different.
It looks like an 80s, 90s comic, and it reads
right. So I'm reading it. I'm like, wow, this does. I mean, if you told me this comic came out in 1992, I would have said, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Tell me it came out 79. Like, it doesn't look like that at all. This was clearly, we talked about this before at some point, the second wave. Mm-hmm. You know, the first wave at Marvel was the 60s, Kirby and Lee and Colin and Ditko. But then you get the 70s and you get the guys who grew up reading those books, and it's a lot different, and they're all on drugs.
Yeah, the LSD is quite apparent.
Yeah, a lot more cosmic-y stuff. Hey, man.
The thing about this little collection is that it gets progressively better and more fun as you keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you get to skip all of the crap. I don't even know if it's crap, but it's just the things that matter to the end of it. And it's kind of crazy how well all of the things fit together. And then you get to, you know, the final bit, which is the death of Captain Marvel.
A Marvel graphic novel, which was a rarity back then.
Yes.
Which tells you how important this was.
Well, I mean, I think that was the thing, too, is when we were kids, like, it stood out because it was still a unique thing for several reasons.
Right.
You know, A, it was a sort of self-contained graphic novel, of which there was only, you know, a handful of them that had ever happened. It was called The Death of Captain Marvel, which now seems like so... How many deaths of have we seen?
Yeah.
Death of Doctor Strange, Death of Wolverine, really Death of Superman,
right now.
Death of Robin. This was not common at this point. So when they said it, there was sort of the idea that I don't think there was the same expectations that we have today. When we see the death of now, we're like, yeah, sure, whatever. Which sort of added to the experience of reading through this.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, we talked a lot about in recent years, you know, not wanting to see a ton of realism in comics in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, PTSD or things that where you start to mm-hmm. unravel the story, it comes apart. So here you have a story in which the main character dies of cancer. And there's a real tragedy to it
yes.
that I felt reading it because it's relatable. Like mm-hmm. I know people who have died of cancer, unfortunately. That feeling of helplessness that he has and then his friends have, I've felt that. And so I got a little anxious reading this because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he got punched by Galactus and he died from his injuries. It's like he's got this thing in him because of the gas he was exposed to by Nitro. That's been growing over time. His powers have held it at bay for a while, but now it's no longer able to do it, and he's not going to make it.
And he accepts it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really great about it is that they ask a lot of questions. Like, well, how can this happen? You have superpowers. We know all of these people. We have all this science. And they address all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Captain Marvel is the first one to accept it. Rick Jones does not take it well. Because there's a thing where Rick Jones and Captain Marvel shared a body. It's a whole thing.
Right. They firestormed it, like the Avengers Forever.
They're very close in that way. I also really liked that. At the end of it, like they hadn't seen each other at the beginning, which is kind of sad. But, like, they grew close because of it. They don't hate each other.
Right.
Like, they care about each other. And, you know, Captain Marvel is actually written like this really mature, self-aware adult person.
Mm-hmm.
And it really surprised me. I'd say the first chunk of it didn't seem all that special. And I was like, eh, you know, I see what they're getting at. But as they kept going through the writing, the characterization and the storytelling really did seem very modern in a way that I don't think I was expecting from a guy. So at a certain point, it picks up, and I'd say the last half or third of it, it became really clear, like, why we're talking about it, mm-hmm. I think.
The scene that really got me, so he goes to Mentor, who is, again, Thanos' father on Titan, and they scan him with Isaac, the supercomputer, and, you know, they get the diagnosis, there's nothing he can do, and he has to go tell his girlfriend, who doesn't mm-hmm. know. And that page really got me.
Oh, where he's sitting on the bench?
Yeah, it's all silent, it's all body language, and if the panels with him talking to his girlfriend are interspersed with panels of Mentor watching the conversation, mm-hmm. and finally having to walk away because it's too painful.
Yeah, that's a great page.
It's a great page. It's a great really page.
Is. Body language. It's very, except the one where she's kind of in a spread eagle in her bikini. I was like, that's weird.
Well, her boyfriend just walked over. You know, yeah. It's time for action. But then it all changes when, you know, because he's clearly upset.
Yeah.
I did like that they call it, you know, let's call in all the big brains. So they call in mm-hmm. Reed Richards and Beast, and they call in, for some reason, Wonder Man and Thor as well.
Yeah. They did say that at one point they're naming all the people that he knows, and like, Thor's here because these are all masters of science. I was like, he is?
Yeah.
Also, Jim Starlin, not great at drawing a Thor hammer. That was the thing I took out of it.
Not great at drawing Black Panther either, because he's got Batman ears.
Fair enough.
But so they got Hank Pym, T'Challa, Tony Stark,
Beast,
Vision, Beast, and Reed Richards, and for some reason, Wonder Man and Thor. They're all there to try to solve cancer. And I like that they were like, cancer is not like a thing. It's so different. It's so unique to every person. And that's the part of the problem with cancer, why it's so hard to come up with a cure, because every cancer is different and every body's reaction to cancer is different. And they're like, we can't just do this. Doctor Strange is there too. And then they get around it by saying his nega bands keep him from being healed. Like, if he takes the bands off, he dies like basically immediately.
Because they're stopping the cancer. They're slowing the cancer down.
But they also are preventing the cure that they did find in another planet.
And I thought that was great. I was like, that's quality explanation.
They thread the needle.
Yeah, they did. Well, it's interesting because the other thing is you keep seeing the hero in repose and he's sad. He's trying to record his memoirs. He's going through the stuff, but he's accepted it. And then there's right before that scene that you're talking about, there's a scene where he's sort of in his own quarters and he gets pissed off.
Yeah.
And he smashes the computer. And it isn't like, I don't know, it isn't comic booky. It is melodramatic for sure, but I just felt
people do that.
Yeah,
you go through the stages of grief for yourself.
Yeah, and Mentor is like, this can't be. And he goes in, and the Avengers scientist or whoever, like they just like, this isn't going to happen. And then very quickly, we go to his deathbed chamber.
Yeah.
Right after that, because it sort of happened. And all the heroes show up, and you have a, great, like maybe one of the best full-page spreads of all the heroes showing up because they respect him, and you buy it. You 100% buy it in a way that, like, if Triathlon was dying, you wouldn't.
Right.
And, like, at this point, I did not expect to have feelings.
Yeah, for sure, because I don't really know the character that well, but like, it was written so emotionally sensitively.
Yes.
That by the end, I was like, fuck, I really wanted him to survive. Like, Spider-Man breaks down when he goes to see him in his room and can't face it.
Like, he walks out. By the way, that happened to me.
Yeah.
With a love. Like, that was like, I walked in, I saw it, and I was like, and I had to leave because it, like, and so I was like, that to me felt like, the Starlin had seen some of this, because that was a really real thing. I actually really liked the other thing. Drax comes in, and they have history together, and he just said, I'm not going to kill you. We're friends. You saved me, and that's really sweet. But he brings a Skrull general with him.
Yeah.
And the Skrull general's like, listen, we have always respected you because we are war people. So here's a medal. And they're like, you can't accept it from a Skrull because they're the enemies of the Kree. And he's like, you see the Kree around here? Fuck them. Which was great.
There was, unintentional or intentional comedy in it a little bit. Like when Rick Jones comes in to see his friend and he's like having his breakdown, for some reason the Thing is still there. So it's kind of awkward. He's got like big bulgy eyes. He's like, whoa, fuck. I assume they were friends. I don't, I'm not familiar with the comics, but like it was just funny that the Thing was just sort of there while they were, his girlfriend and Rick Jones were breaking down at his bedside. But then things like, we got to leave him alone for a while. It was all done very well. And then, it's progressing. He looks terrible in the bed. And then he talks to his, I guess the Thing must be one of his closest friends. Because at the end, it's Rick Jones, Drax, his girlfriend, Moondragon, and the Thing. So they must have had a relationship. And then, he falls into a coma and then it's it.
Well, there's one more sequence.
You don't want this to happen all the time.
No.
Right? You don't want, Jason Todd to get leukemia. But.
No.
To do it one time in a very special episode, in a very special story, with a character they clearly were planning on moving on from.
And it was a good character for it.
Yeah.
Because he has some gravitas, he has some history, everybody has a reason to respect him, and it's a great costume, by the way. It's one of those ones that, kind of...
It is a great costume. We didn't talk about the end where, he dies, and Thanos is dead also. He's been turned into a statue in a very awkward pose. And he comes back alive one more time to usher Captain Marvel to the other side, but they have to do it in a fight because they are enemies. And I really liked that.
But it was very respectful, too. Like,
yeah, he's like, look, I'm going to help you get over there, but we have to fight. That's what we do.
Interesting, because in this one, and they said this in the movies, but they would say, Thanos is the Mad Titan. He's up for death. And if you look at, it was that recent book we just read where there's Kid Thanos and he just wants to kill everything or whatever.
Oh, right.
But the way that he's portrayed in the movies is actually fairly sane. It's done a different way. And this Thanos sort of reminded me of that. you know, where he's, you know, there's a respect to him about the whole thing. He's a killer, whatever. But it was like, we're going to fight. But there wasn't malice involved with it. It was just, this is the thing that happens. And the ending was fairly surreal, I think.
The fight's basically a way for him to accept his death.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered if this was like his, you know, not hallucination or dream sequence or whatever, but it doesn't even matter, is the thing.
No. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of theories about what happens to your brain when you're dying, and there's a lot of ideas that you hallucinate. That's what all the near-death experiences are. But, you know, Death, the character Death, who Thanos is in love with, shows up, and the three of them walked through the light, and then he's dead. Again, you know, for a comic from 1982, it was very mature. Emotionally,
it was really one of those things, like, you know, I'm sure that the Workaday stuff that they had done, or Jim Starlin, and, you know, whatever, was fine, but it wasn't. And like, they gave him this chance, and this is when it was unique to like do a story, and like, he ran with it, I think. Yeah. You know, because of its unusualness at the time, I think it worked really well. I also think the length was perfect,
like, yes,
because it was this original graphic novel, they didn't have to fit it into a space of a given bunch of issues. It was as long as it needed to be. And when it was over, and you know, you didn't hang around. There wasn't a ton of epilogue or anything. And I think that worked really well.
The art is very much of its time. Like, it felt like a late 70s, early 80s comic. It's a little overwrought. It's a little melodramatic. The posing is very dramatic.
It was a little European, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, off from the Marvel style model. You know, this stuff where, like, the anatomy wasn't perfect at all, but it kind of fit. Like, it gave it that sort of poetic quality to a certain extent.
Yeah. Starlin's got a very specific look. His faces are very Starlin-esque.
Yeah.
I thought it really worked. In a way, more than the Pat Broderick stuff that was earlier than this. The Pat Broderick stuff felt more modern, where this felt like, oh, I feel like I'm reading a comic from that particular timeline.
Yeah.
Or that particular year. It was beautiful.
I got to say, I was really surprised at how well it worked for me. I thought, oh, it'll be pretty, you know, it'll be good and be interesting, but it'll exist in its time. And, you know, I got choked up by the end, and I had no way expected that. And there was just an earnestness to it that I did not expect in any way. And I think by having Starlin be writer and artist, I think that he really got to really tell the story exactly as he wanted to. And I think that made it work.
You know, we talk about sometimes in comics, especially recently, because you've got a lot of new younger writers coming in who want to pitch these characters against forces they can't punch their way out of. You know, like, Superboy can't punch his way out of inequality. It's just not a thing. And that doesn't work in a monthly adventure story. But here, as a one-off, you can't punch their way out of cancer. You know, there's nothing they can do. There's no quest they can go on. Again, there's a futility. You got every major Marvel character of the age in this building, and they can't do anything about it. And there's a futility to that that was very powerful.
You know what also kind of worked, too, is that I know it's called The Death of Captain Marvel, and I know he dies, but they were doing this thing where they kept going, well, there's less than a 1% chance, and in any other comic book.
Right.
That means that it's going to happen.
And then they do find a cure. They find a cure to another planet, but he can't take it because of the Negabands.
Right. You know, Chekhov's gun never fires.
By the way, they should keep that cure on Earth. What I liked about this from an art standpoint, just from a character standpoint, that splash page you talked about where all the characters are walking into the base, that really transported me, because this is the look of early 80s Marvel, which is, you know, my first sort of entry into it.
Yeah.
And at one point, we see the Avengers back at their base, and it's like the classic lineup, you know, it's like a Beast and Iron Man and Vision and Wonder Man. And Cap, and I was like, that's the fucking Avengers. This is the Marvel Universe. Like, to me, you know, it's always like your first entry into anything touches you the most or affects you the most. This was my entry into Marvel, it was the early 80s. And so these characters and these designs, these costumes, this is, to me, what feels like home for the Marvel characters. And it was also nice to see.
Want to bring up, I think the Nitro stories, the sort of other stuff, they look like they've been recolored.
Oh, probably.
But the Death of Captain Marvel, the graphic novel stuff, looks like it was the color at the time. Steve Olaf, you'll still see his name around. I don't know if it's watercolored or the color's great. And it really is like slightly subdued. I'm assuming they had a better, more expensive printing process
for the graphic
novel. Regular issues for this. Because it's textured and layered in a way that most of the comics didn't. But this isn't been redone with like crap, thank God. This wasn't right. done with sort of modern digital comics on top of art that would have never, you know, isn't meant to be there. The coloring is great. It stands out as special compared to, I think, a lot of comics from this era that I've read.
Yeah. I was really impressed. I really was. I liked all of it. I liked this whole collection. I was trying to decide because at some point throughout the Death of Captain Marvel story itself, they referenced all the storylines. They flashed back to Nitro. They flashed back to his origin. So I was trying to decide, did we need those other ones? We didn't need them, but it was a nice bit of backstory.
Yeah. Well, I think I said when we teased this on the Pick of the Week show, you know, if you're going to read it, like read this version because I think it gives you a whole picture. And you don't even know why you're reading it all, but it comes together. And you could read it on its own, but I don't think it would have the same impact. And it was just kind of cool to see them take these things from 15 years in the past and, you know, 3, 4, 10 years in the past and sort of bring them all together.
Yeah, and it was nice to see also that Carol was there from the beginning. She's been around since the 60s.
We have no idea how she becomes Captain Marvel after this.
Well, that was funny because he just appeared in the most recent issue of Captain Marvel because all the old Marvels are being brought back to fight her. It's the whole thing. And at one point she's like, oh, I've watched him die already. And I was like, did you? Like, hey, you weren't there. You weren't on the base.
Call her out.
I do remember one of my favorite stories as a kid. It was in the 90s. It was an Avengers annual where Game Master and maybe the Collector, two cosmic beings, were having a bet. So they set up one of those classic, you know, one-off stories where they grab a bunch of characters and make them fight in space. And so it was like all these, you know, Avengers get pulled out and they have to fight dead characters. You know, somebody has to fight Bucky. But then one of them was Captain Marvel. And I didn't really know much about him, but I remember just being cool that there was this seminal event that still emotionally affected the characters. I don't know how Carol became Captain Marvel.
And there's been a lot of Captain Marvels over the year, just different versions of there's like that one in Avengers Forever. There was Monica Rambeau as Captain Marvel for a point.
Well, she was Captain Marvel when I was really getting into comics in the middle to late 80s.
There was Marvel Boy. There's been a bunch of them. And I remember, I don't know if this is still true, but you know, when Captain Marvel came back, I think there was some story we read at some point where he was in it, but he was like from an earlier time. Mm-hmm. Some story, maybe it was Sentry or something like that.
Sure.
And he had some weight. He had some gravity. Like when he came back, like it felt like it mattered in a comic book. And I think it's because they kept him dead. I hope that that is a rule. We don't bring, and I'm sure that that will be broken at some point, but
they don't bring back Bucky.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm reading Carol's origin in the 1970s in a book called Miss Marvel. They said that the explosion that we saw, you know, the Nitro explosion, changed her, you know, because she was hurt in the explosion.
She technically did see him die because that was the, anyway.
Right. It changed her genetic structure to meld with Captain Marvel's, effectively turning into a human Kree hybrid.
You can't get away with that now.
No.
I wish you could get away with stupid origins now that don't make any sense.
Superhero science.
Yep.
Hard water. It's all about hard water.
I think a certain amount of ignorance had to be, like, we didn't know how stuff worked.
This sounds good. We didn't have the internet to look it up. It was kids reading the books.
No one knows shit.
They were all super high while they were writing it.
Not the hard water. That goes back. They didn't even know where to get a jazz cigarette.
Well, hard water, they were on a lot of bourbon.
That's true.
Yeah, I think this was terrific. I'm so glad we did this. I don't think I would have even thought of it, but yeah, I'm so happy we read this book.
But it had just come out, so I just kind of noticed it, and it was not too long. I mean, lately, that's been the first thing I look at. What's a page count? All right, 180, I can do this.
Injustice really broke us.
The New Gods and Injustice.
The Death of Captain Marvel, the gallery edition. I guess we should rate the whole book, but do we want to separately rate the actual graphic novel inside the book?
No, I think you rate it as a single experience.
Death of Captain Marvel Gallery Edition. I think it's a singular experience. I'm going to give it a 4.7.
I was going to say like 4.25, but I don't disagree with what you said. I was trying to be realistic, but as a volume, it gets progressively better as you read. Like it gets better and better. I don't think there's a lot of things that do that. You know, like it starts like this is fine, and then by the end, you're kind of in love with it.
Yeah, I recommend anyone who has not read this should read this story. This is a great story, and it's important you know, the history mm-hmm. of Marvel.
And it isn't going to feel like you're reading something that is so anachronistic that it's, you know, it's kitschy. I don't think it's that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And look, if you can only get your hands on the actual novella, go for it. But mm-hmm. this gives you a lot of interesting history.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Marvel stuff.
The Death of Captain Marvel, Starlin, Lee, Thomas, Englehart, Munch, Colin, Broderick.
It's good names.
Good job. Really fun. So there you go. There's our Booksplode, our final Booksplode of the month and of the year. Josh and I were talking earlier, and we'll be back in January with another Booksplode so we can get the Talksplodes on track and give him a little more time to book some guests.
Yeah. I don't know what the next book's going to be, but it's probably not going to be Marvel. That's what
yeah, we did six this year, and four were Marvel, but a fifth one was the book about Stan Lee. So really five were about Marvel.
We really did a lot of reading for Booksplodes this year.
We did. So we're probably going to try to mix it up a bit more.
Yeah.
Next year, not so
if anybody
Marvel
knows
heavy.
A good 35-page DC story.
I'll do some looking. I'll present you with some options.
Okay.
In the meantime, you can go to ifanboy.com. That's where you'll find our weekly Pick of the Week show, where Josh and I review the week's new comics. You can find all of our Booksplodes that we just talked about. You can find Josh's Talksplode creator interview shows. You can find our monthly Media Splode show. All those splodes were unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Thank you to them. You'll be able to listen to our all media year end roundup next week. That's our year end show. And we thank you if you've listened all throughout the year to our Booksplodes. We do really love doing these collected editions. They're super fun.
Yeah, it really is. It's a different kind of conversation. I gotta work.
So thanks for that. And we'll be back in January with more Booksplodes. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much, everyone. This is the end of everything. This is the end I know. This is the end. Take your love with you when you go. Oh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.